Tasmat pitinam artanam artim para parabhavan tapasa panayanam tata sadisham kartu arhasi. Dear son, we have been defeated by our enemies and therefore we are very much aggrieved. Please mercifully fulfill our desires by relieving our distress to the strength of your austerities. Please fulfill our prayers. 32. Pnimahe vopadhyayam brahmishtam brahmanam gurum yatāryasa yejashyama sapatnam stavate jasaha. Translation and purport. Since you are completely aware of the Supreme Brahman, you are a perfect brahmana, and therefore you are the spiritual master of all orders of life. We accept you as our spiritual master and director, so that by the power of your austerity we may easily defeat the enemies who have conquered us. Purport. One must approach a particular type of guru to execute a particular type of duty. Therefore, although Vishwarupa was inferior to the demigods accepted him as their guru to conquer the demons. Now we'll read together. Nadarayanti yarteshu yavishtangri abhivadanam chandobhyo nyatrana brahman vayojashtya sakaranam
Yavishta angri
at the lotus feet of a junior.
Abhivadanam
offering obeisances.
Chandobhya
the Vedic mantras.
Anyatra
apart from.
Not.
Brahman.
O Brahmana.
Vaya.
Age.
Jaishtyasya.
Of seniority.
Karanam.
The cause.
Translation of Prabhupada by Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The demigods continued, "Do not fear criticism for being younger than us. Such etiquette does not apply in regard to Vedic mantras. Except in relationship to Vedic mantras, seniority is determined by age. But one may offer respectful obeisances even to a younger person who is advanced in chanting Vedic mantras. Therefore, although you are junior in relationship to us, you may become our priest without hesitation." It is said, Vridatvam vayasa vina. One may be senior without being advanced in age. Even if one is not old, one gains seniority if he is senior in knowledge. Vishwarupa was junior in relationship to the demigods because he was their nephew, but the demigods wanted to accept him as their priest, and therefore he would have to accept obeisances from them. The demigods explained that this should not be a cause for hesitation. He could become their priest because he was advanced in Vedic knowledge. Similarly, Chanika advises, Nichat api utamam yanam. One may accept education from a member of a lower social order. The Brahmanas, the members of the most elevated varna, are teachers, but a person in a lower family, such as a family of Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, or even Shudras, may be accepted as a teacher if he has knowledge. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approved of this when he expressed this opinion before Ramananda Roy. Kiva vipra kiva nyasi shudra keninoi ye krishna tatvas veta e se guruhoi. It does not matter whether one is a brahmana, shudra, kriyasta, or sannyasi. These are all material designations. A spiritually advanced person has nothing to do with such designations. Therefore, if one is advanced in the science of Krishna consciousness, regardless of his position in human society, he may become a spiritual master. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Dinagina Shalabhaya Shakshurum Vinitam Vinatasvani Shri Guradaya Namah. So, there's quite a few interesting points that are being brought up in the translation and purports. In verse 31, we can very clearly see that the demigods are not pure devotees. They have a particular interest, a particular desire they want to be fulfilled, material desire. In this case, it is the desire to win, to vanquish, and the desire to be relieved of distress, of they're very aggrieved, very much aggrieved. So they approach the spiritual master with this desire. The demigods are not pure devotees, but they are devotees nonetheless. Why is that? Because whenever they're in distress, whenever they're in difficulty, what do?
They come to the Lord.
They pray to the Lord or to his pure devotees. They pray to get protection, to be relieved from their anxiety, to be helped in their responsibilities. So they actually have this tendency to surrender to the Lord when the circumstances require. They're not constantly Krishna conscious, but they are Krishna conscious when there's a moment of great need. And they're also devotees because they follow religious principles, they follow the Vedas, the principles of the Vedas. So in this way they're devotees because they follow religious principles. While the non-devotees, the demons, they have material desires as well. They also want to win and they also want to enjoy. But they don't follow religious principles, they don't pray to the Lord to obtain victory and to relieve them from distress. That is the great difference between the devas and the demons. And in many cases, it's mentioned in the verses previously that in general the demigods, they always win when they have confrontation, big fights. The devas win. They get used to winning, but they don't always win. Sometimes they get into trouble, they make offenses, they become proud, and then Krishna arranges to learn a lesson, to make spiritual advancement, not to just be conquerors and enjoy and be on top of this material universe, but also to make spiritual advancement. So actually when they're in trouble, it's a good opportunity for them to rely on the Lord, to pray to the Lord, to make actual spiritual advancement. And as we know, that doesn't happen very often because they're always in a kind of victorious situation. So here's a good opportunity for the devas to learn some spiritual lessons, to actually make spiritual advancement. Because they got themselves into trouble because of pride, familiarity, complacency, and they offended their spiritual master, Vihaspati, they got into trouble. So they had to really, rectify themselves, find a way how to get back into the right position. So they're desperate, basically they're desperate to find a spiritual master, because Brahma said, go to such and such devotee and become their disciple, accept him as your guru. So they really took that instruction from Brahma very strongly, and they went to try to get Ishwaru to become their spiritual master. And it was not that easy because there was some situation that had to be addressed. The fact that he was their nephew. So in general, you don't look for your nephew to become your guru. It's just not very common. So they had to find the right understanding to explain to Ishwaru how he could become their guru without hesitation. So here in this first verse, verse 31, we hear about two important things as well. We hear about the strength of austerities and the power of prayer, which are two very important aspects of spiritual life. So, you know, the strength of austerities, they actually go to Vishwaroop because he had so much power because of the austerities he was performing, that he could actually give them the shakti, the empowerment they needed to defeat the demons. So austerities is very important. And, you know, we know there are many kinds of austerities. We hear in Srimad Bhagavatam very extreme situations where Hiranyakashipu does amazing austerities to get so much material power. And, you know, in Krishna consciousness, we don't follow this principle of extreme austerities. What are the austerities that we follow? Srila Prabhupada gave us very basic austerity.
Ekadashi,
like today. Just a little bit of austerity.
Chanting around.
What else?
Living in the temple.
Living in the temple or around the temple.
Four regulated principles.
In Kali Yuga, that's a big austerity. Especially here in the West, to follow the regular principles for most people is like, wow, what an austerity. And then also, what else do we have to do?
Chant.
Huh? She mentioned chant around. And get up. Early. That's quite an austerity for you as well, to get up early in the morning. You know, if you look at society in general, the moment they don't have to go to work or school or something, all they can think of is just sleep throughout the whole morning. And so, you know, in Kali Yuga, just to get up early, to take bath, to chant around, to follow the regular principle, these are enough austerities. And they actually give us a lot of strength to use in Krishna consciousness and also to make spiritual advancement. We shouldn't get attached just to the austerities for the austerity's sake. We should use them in service, in advancing spiritually, going deeper into the philosophy, into the chanting. And we're very fortunate here in Rajasthan, we get so many opportunities for association, seminars, to go deeper in kirtan, japa, and so many different aspects of Krishna consciousness. So austerity is very important for devotees, but we don't get completely obsessed with them. Sometimes we do like strange austerities, too much austerity, and that might not be necessary for our service and for spiritual advancement. And the other thing we should mention is, please fulfill our prayers. So the demigods are actually praying very strongly. They're praying first. They pray to Lord Brahma, and they pray to Lord Vishnu many times, and in this case they're praying to Vishwaroop. They're really praying, so they're very humble in that sense. They're praying to Vishwaroop to help them out, because they're in a very precarious position. So what are the kind of things that we, you know, prayer is really part of our life. You know, when we chant, we're trying to get in a prayerful mode, and that should carry us throughout the whole day and throughout the whole life. In a prayerful mood, you know, that we're constantly able to pray to the Lord to help us in many, many different ways. What are some of the things that we could pray to the Lord to give us that we need in our spiritual life, even in our material life?
To be Krishna conscious.
The highest prayer. Like a little bit maybe more close to our situation and our needs. Yeah, we can pray for tolerance and humility. We don't have them by nature, so we really have to pray to the Lord to give it to us. So what other things we can pray? Tolerance, humility.
Sincerity.
Well, usually sincerity is what helps us to pray. If we're not sincere in our prayer, then it's very difficult to pray with success.
What if you're a non-believer, but you live your life...
What is it?
What if you're like a non-believer, but you live your life like a prayer, pay your bills, raise your kids, and...
Non-believer who's praying, is that what you said?
Non-believer who doesn't pray, who doesn't go to the temple, and stuff like that, but he lives his life
Maybe we can leave, that for the end of the class when we have the discussion. We're trying to find which elements we pray for ourselves as devotees.
For our japa.
Concentration.
Yeah,
have a steady mind. I mean, there's many things we can pray.
Courage to give up.
Courage.
Courage to give up our attachments.
Courage, in general, to give our attachments and many other things. But we need a lot of courage to do our service and to make spiritual advancement. Then there's many others like strength. We need strength, spiritual and physical strength to do our service. We need intelligence. You know, we're not necessarily that intelligent, so we need Krishna to give us intelligence to overcome many obstacles and serve the Lord nicely. We need determination, we need enthusiasm, so we can pray for all these things. Compassion, to preach in a compassionate way, to be people Krishna conscious. And we can even pray for humor, a little bit of humor. Sometimes we're too serious. So we can pray to the Lord to give us some humor and to appreciate humor as well. And of course, to develop a loving attitude towards his devotees, towards the Lord, and anything related to him. And then what are the things that we might pray in the negative sense to take away from us that we have a lot of, that we don't want, we don't need?
Attachments.
Like?
Lust.
Mm-hmm. This, we can pray to the Lord to take away lust. By ourselves, it's impossible, so we really need Krishna to take away the dust in our heart and
greed,
greediness,
hardness,
yes, to make our heart soft.
Anger.
We get so easily angry, so we really need to pray the Lord to take away anger. What else?
Envy.
Envy is a very bad one. We really need to pray to take away jealousy, envy, and fear. Not be afraid to be able to perform our service and spiritual life without fear. Like the demigods were very much fearful. So we want to pray the Lord to take away this fear and become courageous. That's the positive side. And doubt, and lamentation, and hatred. There's so many bad things that are in our hearts, and we want to get rid of them. Some of them we have more, some of them we have less, but we all have some level of these negative characteristics which we pray to the Lord to take away. So then, we can see the power of prayer. The demigods will get their blessing, and their prayers will be fulfilled. We've seen many times in Srimad Bhagavatam the demigods' prayers are fulfilled. The Lord incarnates, the demigods become victorious over the demons, so their prayers are very powerful. We can see also in our own lives, many times we pray for devotees who are going through difficult, physical or other type of difficulties, and it has an impact. And more people are acknowledging the power of prayer. I think I've seen even in Time magazine there was an article about how prayer has an impact in the health of the human beings. So that's a very important point of prayer. And then in the second verse that we read today, 32, Srila Prabhupada talks about in the purport he talks about different types of guru. I checked it out in the database, and in many cases he said there aren't many types of guru, there's only one guru. There's not many types of guru. And he says it many times. And then other times he talks about, like here, different types of guru. So we have to understand that what is one is a guru principle. There's only one guru principle. It's like there's only one God, there's only one Vishnu Tattva, which has many different manifestations, many different forms, pastimes, activities, etc. So the same is with the guru principle is one. But it can have many different manifestations, different aspects. So who can mention some of the aspects that the guru principle can have that we know about and we experience ourselves?
first person who abuses, who thinks is in contact.
Yeah, what's the name? That's a difficult name. So the guru that introduces us to Krishna consciousness, or the person who gives us the first book, or encourages us to join or come and chant Hare Krishna, whatever. So that's the one type of manifestation of guru, which is very important, because you know, even though we might never meet that devotee again in our life, he actually opened the door for us to come to Krishna consciousness, or introduced us to the process of Krishna consciousness. So that's one very important manifestation of the guru principle, whatever forms. So the Diksha Guru, or Gurus, sometimes the Gurus have several Diksha Gurus, you know, Sannyas Guru, First Initiation Guru, Second Initiation Guru, could be the same, could be different. So there's many Diksha Gurus, and then Shiksha, even more, there could be a lot of Shiksha Gurus that we have. Some very prominent in our lives, others less prominent. You know, it's mentioned sometimes that even, you know, we might be able to take Shiksha from the most unexpected source. And if we have the right understanding of Guru principle and the right, you know, listening capacity and humility and pure heart, we can, you know, Shiksha Gurus can manifest in amazing moments and places and persons. Then for devotees in ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada has a very, very important position. We, last time I gave class, we read from the book, the Acharya, in which it's clearly mentioned Prabhupada's unique position as a preeminent Shiksha Guru for all ISKCON devotees. So he's the most important Shiksha Guru for all those who are serving in ISKCON and following in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada for serving his mission. Then what other type of gurus do we have? Chaitya Guru. That's the main guru principle from where everything else is manifesting. Guru within the heart, Paramatma. What else? We have a lot of gurus in our disposal. I mean, that we can refer to. We have also the previous acharyas, all the great acharyas in our line. You know, the acharyas that gave, you know, preserved and spread Krishna consciousness. We have also the senior devotees who can also give us guidance when it's needed in our daily life, you know, more close to us and who are helping us in our daily activities. Of course, Krishna, through Bhagavad Gita, is definitely one of the gurus that we can rely on. Lord Chaitanya as well, to the Shikshastakam. And many other smaller other forms of guru principle. So that's a very important discussion that is being presented here, that there are many different types of gurus, different manifestations of the guru principle. So for the demigods, this manifestation of Viswarup was correct, even though he was inferior to the demigod by age, you know, by traditional culture, he was younger than them. And then in verse 33, which is the verse we read together, the first thing that is mentioned in the verse is, you know, do not fear criticism. So that's something that we're always very concerned about, criticizing. You know, that somebody criticizes us, and something we're, you know, devastated by criticisms that somebody, you know, gives. It's quite easy to criticize others. So do not fear criticism. So they're basically saying, you know, there will be people in society, or, you know, who don't have the right understanding of what is superior, what is inferior, who's a spiritual advance, who's not spiritual advance, who will criticize. So they do not fear criticism, do not be affected by that. And, you know, for the same for us, there will always be criticism of things that we might do, which are correct. So we should not fear it or be influenced by it. Of course, there's positive criticism and there's negative criticism. We're talking about rejecting, you know, inferior criticism. That criticism doesn't help anybody. Doesn't help the one who's making it. Doesn't help the one that is targeted to. But there's also very positive criticism of what we call nowadays feedback. The left use the word criticism, so we say feedback. So this feedback we all need to improve ourselves. So that's like the positive version of criticism. And but actually, in some circles, in academic circles, still the word critique is very much used, you know, to make a proper critique, you know, positive critique of somebody's presentation, document, essay, paper. So it could have a positive aspect as well. In general, the tendency is to see it as something negative, always criticizing or something not very deep, not very well intentioned. So this principle of criticism is being brought up here in the translation. And then the main point that has been brought up in the translation and throughout the purport is the principle of etiquette of relationship between different levels of society, different ages in human society. So the importance of etiquette in Vedic culture and civilization is very big, because it was a very subtle civilization. So the relationship of learning different aspects of society were very, very important. There was such a deep sense of etiquette, of relationship between ages and genders and spiritual advancement and varnas and spiritual and ashrams, etc., etc. There was a very sophisticated system of etiquette, as well as the concept of dharma, the concept of religion, required a lot of acute vision, because it was very subtle. So in order to understand what was proper dharma, what was adharma, you needed to develop finer capacities, you know, subtle, finer capacities of the brain. And these things, you know, we've lost a lot in Kali Yuga. These subtle aspects of religion and etiquette are almost gone. That's why we don't see so much etiquette nowadays. Nobody wants to respect anybody else. And that's one of the problems of this day and age. But of course, more important than etiquette is very important to govern human society so that it behaves in a way which is in goodness, in a way which is more subtle and more refined. But even more important than that, which is very important, is the principle of spiritual advancement. And here the whole discussion is that even though by etiquette standards somebody older should be respected, because if the one younger was more advanced in knowledge, he could have been accepted as a guru or a spiritual master. So the spiritual advancement is more important than etiquette. Maybe you can think of some examples throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam of personalities who, from a material point of view, might have been inferior to those they were speaking to or instructing. Shukadeva Goswami, the one who spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. When he came, even though he was very young and practically an avaduta, you know, everybody stood up and everybody respected him because they had the finer vision. They had enough spiritual advancement to see somebody who was even more advanced. And that requires quite some advancement to appreciate a spiritually advanced person. Especially when he doesn't have any position, he doesn't have any particular material aspect which one would automatically respect. Anna Suya?
I'm not sure, but I was going to say, like, he's the Lord, but still he was distracting his mother.
Okay, that's a good one. Sometimes the Lord appears as a young boy and gives great spiritual instructions to his superiors, his mother, in this case.
The four Kumaras,
yes.
Jadavat,
I was thinking of him too.
Kamaladev.
Because he was, well, because he was small. He was there. You know, more close to us, we have Haridas Thakur. You know, even though he was born in a Muslim family, he was a great devotee and inspiration for many. And Lord Chaitanya made it clear that we shouldn't look at that aspect of his external manifestation of material life, but see how advanced he was, you know, in chanting the holy name. And very close to us, also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, recently we were reading about Lord Shiva, that the Daksha, you know, kind of wanted Shiva to respect him because he was, you know, inferior to him in age, and Lord Shiva was obviously more advanced.
Pralad
Maharaj with his father.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a sannyasi in Varanasi. Yes, the Mayavadi sannyasi.
So from an etiquette point of view? Well, he was, I don't know if he was inferior from an ethical point of view, but he played a very humble role.
We had a sannyasi initiation in school which was not considered very oriented.
That's why he took that lesson at humble role. And so there are many, many examples of personalities who, from a material or external point of view, seem to be inferior. Because of their spiritual advancement, we worship them, their instructions are so important, and they really are the gurus or the examples for all of us. So we can see in this age, in Kali Yuga, etiquette and spiritual advancement are very difficult for humans to understand and apply, because it requires a lot of finer capacities, more subtle capacities. You know, we kind of, in Kali Yuga, we look more at positions. You know, somebody has a particular position of power, you know, president of this or that, or pope or whatever, you know, all the external positions give people like a certain, they get a lot of respect because of that. And the actual subtleties of etiquette and especially the aspect of spiritual advancement is very difficult for most people to understand. I think also when you go to Kumbh Mela, we also see how there's so many people who are so-called spiritual, you know, seekers, teachers, people following different paths of self-realization. Srila Prabhupada mentioned that there were some who were authentic and some who weren't, but it required spiritual vision to be able to see those who are sincere, who are actually authentic spiritual personality. For most people, as long as you put a certain cloth on and you do certain tricks or you talk in certain ways or whatever you do, that's enough. And I think I've talked about this film called Kumare, this guy from New Jersey who dresses up as a swami, goes to Phoenix or Arizona, wherever he goes, and he starts a whole following, you know, who follow him. It becomes really serious. Hundreds of people following him in his lecture. And all he does is he dresses like a swami and he talks funny, you know, with an Indian accent, and he says very vague things, and he has tons of followers. So people didn't have the capacity to understand if he was advanced or not, if he was authentic or not. And the externals completely capture their consciousness. So it's very, you know, that's why we need in Kali Yuga to, everybody needs to learn what it is to be advanced, who should we actually respect and learn from, because otherwise we can easily get fooled. So that's why we need to actually get a strong basis of Krishna consciousness, which are Prabhupada's books, chanting and associating with devotees who are close to us. Otherwise we can easily think such and such personality is very great because of external things. He looks nice, or he talks nice, or whatever, or he dresses nice, or whatever. So, you know, we really have to ourselves really try to understand what it is to be advanced and recognize it in others and respect it in others. So maybe we'll finish here and maybe some comments, questions, additions.
When the Lord Brahma advises the demigods to approach Vishnu, he warns them that he has a tendency to side with the demons. Srila Prabhupada says in purport that he was always inclined towards the benefit of the asuras. So how can we understand this, that because it's understood that demigod, demigods are, so to say, good guys and demons are bad guys. So how is a spiritual master siding up and being concerned with benefit of demons?
So in this case, you know, the demigods really, you know, capture emotion, be sure to at least side with them for the moment because of their prayers and their, you know, sincerity. Why there are gurus that have a favoritism to the demons? I guess it's a question of nature or how the demons relate to their personality. Maybe they were very devotional or very doing the right things in regards to the guru. Like, you know, the same case with Shukracharya, as it was mentioned recently, that the demigods, when the demons were neglecting that relationship, they were losing. But when they were very, very serious about that relationship with Shukracharya, they got so much shakti and so much power they could even defeat the demigods. So I don't know much about the past and future history of Vishwarupa. I don't know so much about his relationship with the demons, but I guess it depends a lot on the relationship that the demons or the demigods develop with gurus, with spiritual personalities, or those who are following austerities.
I ask you this question because often I face this dilemma, we're not talking about demigods and demons, but good and bad amongst us. You know? Those who are good, devotees who are good, they live on the good things, they live proper. If somebody does something wrong and misbehaves, they expect you to punish and to be, you know, whatever, whatever like that. And sometimes I feel that the wrongdoer deserves, I mean, I need to side up with him to help him out or something, but there is strong opposition from so-called good devotees that no, it should be whatever like that. So I think that this is something very relevant that on a spiritual level, a person who is put in the position of, like in this case, his spiritual master or spiritual authority in the temple, should be given freedom to sometimes, so to say, side up or be expressing, you know, some concern and well-being for somebody who is seen as a wrongdoer, because eventually they're all spirituals, all spirituals. They are not these bodies and all that stuff, but in course of performing activities, we appear to be good and bad. And then I think that those who are in the role of good should be open to, you know, to that spiritual authority sometimes to side up with the dead and help them for the purpose of helping them out, actually, the spiritual man.
Yeah, I don't know about the comparison between demons and devotees who have, you know, maybe some wrongdoings or demonic, even demonic tendencies. It's maybe a little different. But the principle of good and bad, which is a material consideration, and the principle of spirituality or the absolute nature of Krishna consciousness, of spiritual relationships, is two different things. So that's why, you know, anybody can get benefit from spiritual teaching and spiritual personality, whether one is good or one is so or not so good. And especially in Kali Yuga, you know, everybody has a little bit of both, or a lot of one and a little bit of the other, but everybody has the two aspects within himself. So it even applies even more. There aren't such things as, you know, eternally, you know, condemned demons and eternally, you know, pure devotees. Everybody has kind of both aspects to them. So it's up to the spiritual leader and the spiritual personality to help those in the way that he considers best for their upliftment. That's if a person's a spiritual personality and their relationship is there. The role is more like a manager and trying to sort things out, then you have to, it's more about, you know, using one's intelligence to do what's best for the situation, for the temple, for the people concerned. So it's not necessarily the same to be in a position of spiritual, upliftment of somebody, and to manage, human interactions and what some consider right, others consider wrong. You have to, as I mentioned, it's all very subtle and requires very fine vision to be able to do the best thing in a particular situation. So that's my answer to what I perceive being something more down to earth in our situation, our temples, our relationship.
Many times in Srimad Bhagavatam, bad people are not so bad, finally. And good people are not so good, eventually. So, like in this story of King Shitaket, who took birth as a demon again, and he was fighting against Indra, and finally, the incarnation of King Shitaket was, as a demon, was better than he thought, than Indra thought in the beginning. So I was wondering, why is it like that?
Well, Srimad Bhagavatam is not a materialistic composition. So it's all about, making spiritual advancement, getting closer to Krishna, understanding Krishna's desire, Krishna's plans, all the spiritual aspects of creation and relationship with the Lord. It's more about that than about, right and wrong, materialistic considerations, that's why there's so many examples of things that apparently contradict material and morality or material, how do you say, levels of importance. That's the nature of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's really something to bring people closer to the absolute truth, to Krishna, and that sometimes requires leaving aside all these material aspects. Otherwise it would be something like the Vedas and the Karma Kanda part of the Vedas, and that's not what the Srimad Bhagavatam is about. There's a lot of reference to that because a lot of the personalities that are described were following Vedic principles, Karma Kanda, were very religious and pious and all that. But the stories that are narrated in the Srimad Bhagavatam most of the time go beyond all that. There's all kinds of spiritual teachings, even more than the Mahabharata. Any other comments?
So what are the signs of the true spirit?
What is it?
The signs of the true spirit.
What is the what?
How do you recognize the true spirit?
A true spirit, and the term I never heard it before. What does it mean? What do you mean by true spirit?
Authentic spirit.
Well, I think it's a little bit what you. I think you would want to mention sincerity as something that we pray for. But actually, our prayer has to be sincere. We have to be sincere. So a spirit or soul who is sincere in one's desire to make spiritual progress, the Lord definitely feels it, understands it, and makes the arrangements for that soul to get spiritual upliftment. You know, most of us, that's how we came in contact with Krishna consciousness, because there was some sincerity, some genuine desire to, you know the Lord and make spiritual advancement, or get out of this world, some meaning to, you know, completely fed up with this material existence. So that sincerity is what helps the soul to come in contact with spiritual personalities, with the Lord, and make spiritual progress. I think sincerity is one very important element. From whatever background he is, somebody may be so-called very materially advanced and very intelligent and very pious even, but maybe he's not that sincere and he's not necessarily making so much spiritual advancement or getting in contact with the Lord. And somebody might come from a very awkward background, materially speaking, but because of deep sincerity, the Lord arranges for that person, that soul, to make spiritual advancement, to connect with a particular teacher, particular teachings, and association, etc., etc.
You said many important things very well, so I hesitate to say what I'm going to say, because I was thinking of just telling you after class, but for the sake of the audience, I'll say, you said there are many Diksha Gurus, and I think many Siksha Gurus, you said, but I understand it to be that there's only one Diksha Guru and many Siksha Gurus.
Depends which Diksha you're talking about. If you're talking about like the main Diksha, which I guess is the for the chanting, for connecting the chanting of the holy names with the tradition, but what about the Diksha Guru who gives you sannyas, or the Diksha Guru who gives you Brahman initiation? They might not be the same that make that connection, that form of connection between you and the Parampara
Well, my understanding is that the Diksha is actually the second initiation.
Second name?
Harinama Diksha is an initiation. Generally, it's understood that Diksha is second.
Brahman.
Because by first initiation, disciple accepts Guru, by second initiation, Guru accepts disciple. That's when he really becomes solidified. That's the point. Is that correct? When the relationship is.
What about sannyas?
Sannyas is yet another, it's just another level.
Well, we have many cases of devotees who are different sannyas, Diksha Guru, than their first initiation.
Maybe that word Diksha Guru shouldn't be applied to sannyas guru.
No?
Or Sesha.
Yeah,
it's called sannyas guru.
Diksha should not be used for sannyas.
It's called sannyas guru. Sannyas guru.
Right, because I always heard that the first initiation is the most important.
That's
very important. I'm sure Bob said it, so I
that's probably a big debate. Which initiation is more important, the first one or the second one?
There are many, there are quotes that you don't even need to take initiation for, but in the context, they can see it.
It's a big problem. You can give the answer?
Just a little addition to that.
Okay.
Srila Prabhupada split them up. They used to be one. Srila Prabhupada split them up because we first need more training into chanting our name before we can take Brahman initiation. And unfortunately, due to circumstances, it often happens that the person, the gurus fall down, or the guru leaves the body, or there's no necessity for Diksha initiation, the second initiation. So then maybe they become a different guru, but ideally they're not. So originally speaking, it's the
Diksha
same person.
Yeah. It's one initiation and one guru. But nowadays there's so many different situations that make it a little different. Any more comments, questions? Śrīmad-Bhāgavatam ki jaya, Śrīmad-Bhāgavatam ki jaya, Śrīmad-Bhāgavatam ki jaya, Śrīmad-Bhāgavatam ki jaya,